What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 4:14 a.m. in an evil billionaire's compound overlooking Park City, Utah. And you're listening to Night Call.
Night Call.
Welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am in New York. And as always, with me on the other end of the line in Los Angeles, I have
Molly Lambert. And joining me, as always, is
Tess Lynch.
Hi, guys.
Hey, everybody. When
you hear this, I will be in an environment with considerably less oxygen, freezing my ass off, watching a bunch of movies, probably not meeting any evil billionaires, fingers crossed. Sundance Film Festival. It's Hollywood fever strikes again.
Hollywood
the
fever!
The Oscar nominations came out this morning, so I'm just like in a weird
Everyone's
headspace.
Got Hollywood fever.
Emily, do you have any strong opinions on the nominations?
No, you know, this is the thing. I feel like somehow I've finally grown up to the point, and I tweeted this, but I was just like, yeah, there are movies where I'm glad if they get recognition or get nominated or feel like, you know, career achievements or something for somebody. Like, I feel that way about Roma. But then there are movies like First Reformed, which I love, which are so good and also so weird. And like, Sorry to Bother You and stuff like that, too. I mean, nobody was going to nominate Sorry to Bother You for anything. But like, First Reformed people had been thinking, oh, you know, Ethan Hawke, or it'll get a Best Picture nomination or something. But that movie is, like, special and weird, and I like it better without the recognition of the Academy. Like, it feels more appropriate for it to be unloved by the same awards body that apparently loves Bohemian Rhapsody and Green Book.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like that took all the air out of the room.
Yeah.
In terms of people being like, awards matter. In any way.
Well, they never have. It's no. Just, it kind of is a reminder of the fact that people who are into the Oscars now are like all people who really sought the approval of teachers when they were in school. Like, and I consider myself among that kind of person who was like, I hope the authority figure in the room approves of my work and thinks that I'm special and doing a good job. And I feel like as you grow older, you hopefully grow out of that a little bit or realize that it doesn't all like,
yeah,
like the parent figure doesn't need to approve of something in order for it to be like good.
My boyfriend was like, the only people who care about the Oscars are people who think they might be there someday.
Yeah.
And
that's like, oh, that's true.
I mean, I don't dislike the Oscars. I almost didn't see the Golden Globes. And I realized that if I didn't see them, it would probably be the first time in like 15 years that I didn't watch them. Like, I mean, I watch all these stupid shows, you know, religiously. It's just
I stopped as soon as I didn't have to.
Oh, I stopped before I didn't have to. I stopped long before I
did
didn't
forever.
Have to.
And then I like, it's also funny because like I talk about this a lot, but it used to be like, an award show would happen and then it would be a week-long news cycle of like waiting for the Entertainment Weekly, you know, wrap up on the award show from a week ago. And now it's like by an hour afterwards.
The commentary is live.
You've seen every meme.
Yeah.
You don't need to watch it. You find out what happened.
I don't know. I like to watch something in real time. This goes back to the American Idol thing too, even though that wasn't like up to the minute live always.
No, it's like sports.
Yeah, it's sports. And I want to see, I mean, like, I feel like it had been a long run of nothing interesting happening on the Oscars. But then that mixed up with La La Land and Moonlight, that gave it another 10 years of relevancy. That was like the most wacky thing.
What if that was an inside job, guys? The mix up?
It's very possible. Who was it?
Starting a conspiracy.
Yep.
Warren Beatty did it.
And Faye Dunaway.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Bonnie and Clyde, one last job.
Yeah, one last job.
I would definitely watch an awards show if the host were right. And I really was pinning my hopes on Oh Hello.
Well, you know.
That was, that really, yeah, that for me, that was the brilliant. Most exciting.
You know who's available? Thing. Night Call.
Oh, yeah. No, you know what? I don't know that we're available.
Oh, we're available.
Imagine how long. I mean, just so much waiting around. Come on.
Also, you have to go to all these, like, writing rooms and like, approve of terrible jokes and stuff.
No, the jokes will be good because we'll be in charge.
Ah, yes.
Known for our jokes.
Everyone will have to enter and exit the stage on a UFO.
Yeah.
Like a giant Parliament Funkadelic UFO.
Yes.
Excellent.
There will be a parade afterwards. A giant
parade. There'll be a
parade
during.
During. The whole thing, it will be a moving awards show.
Oh, I like that.
We'll shut down the boulevard.
We'll hold it marching down Hollywood Boulevard. Like the Christmas parade.
People would watch that.
A mobile award show would be amazing.
Right? Each float is like you present an award on each float.
Yeah.
I like this.
This is why we're in charge of the Oscars now.
It is, yeah. We don't need approval from a parental figure.
I want to introduce this concept. At the AVN Awards, the best thing that they did, among many good things, was they start the show with the In Memoriam, which makes everybody shut up and sit down. And then you get it out of the way.
But how do you recover from that?
Because you have a comedian come on immediately afterwards and do like some really filthy jokes.
That sounds so jarring and bad.
Life is jarring, Tess.
That's true.
It's the same thing in life. Well, I like the prospect of us pivoting to events in 2019 as part of our media empire.
Academy,
holler at us.
Yeah, speaking of events.
We have an event coming up.
We have an event coming up. Have you heard? We haven't been talking about it much at all on February 5th
at Gold
Diggers.
Well, we've been talking at the very end of podcasts, and I wonder if people have not been tuning in all the way through.
Well, now we're going to put it at the front like the In Memoriam.
Look at us.
Yeah. Get you really, really sad. No, just the opposite. Super happy. We're doing a DJ set. We, as Night Call, are doing a DJ event at Gold Diggers in Hollywood on Santa Monica Boulevard. You may have attended our little pre-Thanksgiving event in November with Molly and Tess. But this time, all of us are going to be there.
Yay!
Spinning.
Our powers will combine.
It's going to be Chinese New Year.
It will be Chinese New Year.
We're going to have some Chinese New Year magic.
Yes. Our resident magician, Emma Cunningham, is going to do some Chinese New Year themed magic that she's working on especially for the show. Very exciting.
I'm really excited for Chinese New Year because New Year didn't really like shift the vibe enough for me. I need a new like a thing to represent something like a new start.
Well, you didn't
we should
feel,
burn some sage at our show.
You didn't feel like the eclipse, for example?
Well, you guys, did you all watch the Super Blood Moon Super Wolf Blood Moon
Hell
Eclipse?
Yeah, I did.
From I was where? Confused about when it happened.
Well, the time zone. Yeah. Differential.
We had totality at 9:15 p.m.
A great time.
Over this past weekend, but we're recording a week out. So 2 weeks ago, a week ago for you. I didn't really understand that it was an eclipse until like that day. And then I was like, oh, I understand now. It's like a big deal because it's going to be a red eclipse.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It also kind of tied up one of the weirdest weather weeks in Los Angeles that I've seen. Which was like 4 days of glorious rain, and now it's super windy and crazy. But yeah, it was a pretty good moon.
I give it a very good moon,
B plus moon.
What?
It takes a lot. You know, I'm not easily impressed.
I was so impressed. First, it turned red, yeah. And then it eclipsed,
yeah,
and then Whoa. It came back,
yeah. And it was I was not thinking that it was going to be as dazzling as it was because it was all like foggy and misty, and I was like, we're not going to see it. But then everything cleared.
Oh, the clouds blew away just in time. Yep. And there was a really good live feed from Griffith Observatory that I was also had up on a computer.
Yes. Wow. Two moons.
Sponsored by angles.
timeanddate.com. They had like an astrophysicist commenting live. And that was really interesting because he like explained a lot of things I didn't understand.
Like what?
That's great.
Like the penumbra.
Ah, yes.
Just about how, like, why it happens. It's, like, in the shadow of another... All the things are lined up in a way that they
but
never are.
Isn't the red from the atmosphere of Earth? Or...
We need an astrophysicist or Allie Ward to come
yes,
on this podcast and
Allie
explain
would
it
know.
To us. You know, it was very beyond comprehension in a way that I like things to be.
Yeah.
But it was also funny because, like, that was all I cared about. And then Twitter was, like, talking about sports. And I was like... Where's the moon discourse?
Guys, we need more moon. Honestly, the PR department for this moon event was not, it didn't really release information in the best way to drum up the excitement necessary. It was like everyone got excited about the name and it sounded really metal.
But there was no way to know when it was happening.
No way to know what, they didn't announce the time. They didn't like
really
say.
What do you mean? I looked on a website and saw.
You had to do extra clicks. They should have told you right on the social media, like all the details.
I should have told everybody what time to check out the moon.
There should have been a Twitter feed for the blood moon. And then in the bio, it would say happening at 9:08 central only on the CW.
I went up to Moon Canyon, which is up at the top of Mount Washington. There's a little area, a canyon called Moon Canyon.
Is it in the shape of
a
moon?
Oh,
or
yeah. That canyon is very cute. It's like
very
a little petite
cute.
Canyon.
And it's like you can see the moon from it, I guess, is why it's
You
moon
can see
canyon.
The moon from anywhere.
No, but it's like I had always been like, I wonder if it's really a good moon viewing spot. And it turns out it is.
Really?
Oh. A bunch of people were up there also to check out the eclipse. And then right when the full eclipse happened... All these dogs started howling.
Really?
Yeah, it was the craziest thing I've ever heard because I thought at first it was people. I thought it was people howling, like howling at the moon. It was like, and then it was
That's
clear
wild.
That it was like every dog in the area and maybe coyotes.
It's like the midnight howl in 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah, it was real. I was like, oh, and just that thing of like, oh, animals are so affected by the moon.
Yeah.
We are animals.
That's so cool.
Hey, speaking of the moon, stuff's growing up there now.
Not anymore.
Oh, did it die?
It died already.
Well, look, it was a good start.
There was a cotton plant on a spaceship, I believe, a Chinese spaceship on the moon.
The Chinese moon lander.
Yes.
And it had cotton and potato seeds, yeast and fruit fly eggs, just to whip up some nice breakfast with those ingredients. It's like a chopped basket, you know?
It had never been grown before
in
those circumstances, but then it died.
Yeah,
That was not on the far side, because this was from the Chinese mission that landed on the far side of the moon. Is this part of the same project?
I think they didn't
plan on the far side, did they?
They didn't plant
on
the moon. It's like in the lunar lander.
Oh, in the pod?
Mm. Yeah. Like in Sunshine when they have the really good greenhouse on the ship.
Yeah.
The only thing that's ever made me think I could live on a spaceship.
Right.
I was like, oh, well, if there are a lot of plants inside, maybe.
I mean, that's, again, like WALL-E. It's like the creepiest thing about... A planet would be if there were no plants.
Right.
It's true.
WALL-E's creepy for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
I did not like WALL-E that much until I was like, oh, it's the if you have kids who are watching a bunch of kid movies and that you're in this like drought where it's just there's nothing to sink your teeth into and then
you
watch
show
WALL-E.
Them old movies.
Yeah.
Like, here, kids, enjoy this.
Yeah. You will enjoy it.
I feel like we didn't get to sufficiently get into that Chinese moon landing when we were rounding up our space news.
Yeah, because it's a big part of space news.
It's a pretty big deal. Also related to the gamma rays, which I was talking about before. Only on Night Call, guys. I was talking about the kind of conjecture that you could get some kind of alien signals from gamma rays, and theoretically one of the best ways to receive them, and where it would be, you know, out of range of the Earth and like a clean, you would be able to get clean signals, would be on the far side of the moon.
Wow.
So
the dark,
you know,
side of the moon.
Yeah. So we're you know, halfway there, guys. Halfway there.
I listened the next day after the eclipse to, they played an old episode of Jonesy's Jukebox where he had Brian May on from Queen, who's also an astrophysicist.
Really?
Oh, right.
Yeah. So he was talking about the Drake equation a lot.
Yeah.
The episode was from 2015 when the last eclipse happened. And I remember listening to it at the time.
Did he talk about neutrinos?
No, but he talked about, like, he was very open-minded about, you know, who knows where we came from. You know, knowing a lot about science doesn't preclude you from believing in aliens. Or, you know, Jonesy was like, oh, do you think that, like, we're the accidental invention of an alien civilization? He was like, oh, I hope so. That'd be nice. Speaking of things that nobody was sure what time they would happen.
Hey.
We all talked about watching the Fyre Festival documentaries on Hulu and Netflix, and then we all decided as a group not to do it as a form of protest against the endless content zone.
Well, I thought you watched them, Molly.
Oh, no, I didn't watch them.
No, she was protesting by not. Oh. I was going to watch them. I heard one of them is definitely better than the other, according to everyone who watched both, which is Fyre.
The Hulu
being...
one is supposed to be better, right?
Whoa, I heard the Netflix one was supposed
to be
better.
Oh, no. The Netflix one is the sponsored one.
Yeah, what? No, Netflix is the one that's, like, produced by Jerry Media.
I came to resent how much time I was spending learning about these documentaries and, like, the differences between them. Just as somebody who didn't want to watch either of them, I still absorbed so much information about it through the ether.
It's like you couldn't help but get information about the Fyre Festival documentaries,
right?
But, like, you had to struggle to have information about the eclipses,
right? But I'm like, I remember when the Fyre Festival thing happened, it was whatever. I don't know.
Look, problem is there were no heroes in that story. You know what I mean? Because it sucks to, like, spend a ton of money on something and have it be bad. But it's also, it just seemed like an absolutely crazy expense for, like, a really...
But it seemed like a Wolf of Wall Street thing where it's like, oh, are we glorifying these idiots for, like, wasting people's time and money? Because, like...
The details I found interesting. I mean, like, the cheese sandwich is something that I'll remember for a long time. And there were great jokes about it. But, yeah, I mean, I planned to watch it, but I thought that Molly's point about, like, endlessly spinning content from something that's
so stupid.
What
made me mad about it is how it turned into a story about the content wars, the streaming wars between Hulu and Netflix.
Right.
And it made it like this, like, Hulu and Netflix are having, like, an East Coast, West Coast rap beef. And, like, everybody wins because you get to watch, like, 4 hours of documentary about a thing that's not that cool. So I was like, this documentary is about a scam. Like, that's the scam.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you're all being scammed into watching whatever because it's there and you're, like, in front of it already.
There's something of, like, this indulgent, like, it's so kind of low stakes.
I watch other garbage, but it's, like, if it's forced on me, I'm like, mm-mm.
You reject it?
Mm-hmm. If I'm like, everybody's watching the thing, it's you have to watch it so you can be in the discourse. I'm like, mm-mm. No.
Well, when it was happening, I feel like there was a lot of hope that, like, it would be the end of something. Like, I remember making some Altamont jokes about it when the actual debacle was happening. And it felt like the clothes are off the emperor. We can kind of, you know, see this sort of hype beast stuff for what it is. But then it feels like it defeats the purpose to, like, mythologize it again, at least so quickly. Like, go back and make a Fyre Festival documentary in 10 years or 20 years when we have more hindsight about where we were culturally. But I feel like right now it's just like, what more are we going to learn that wasn't,
People were saying that, I mean, like, one of the things I learned from Twitter was that the big takeaway was that there were a bunch of, like, service workers in the Bahamas who got really screwed and had to like work for free essentially. And then somebody started a GoFundMe for them. I think it was like Fuck Jerry or whatever was like, hey, help this woman who this documentary is about how we screwed her and all her coworkers. And everybody was like, wait, didn't you get paid for this Netflix making this documentary? Like, why don't you just pay her? Like, again, it seems like I think you're right. Like, there's not enough hindsight because like all the same stuff is still happening.
Yeah. It's too fresh. I mean, so we sometimes if we're just like at a loss, we'll put on Netflix. Not very often, but it's always like an exercise in absurdism in a way. Like David and I will just put on the Netflix and see, like go down as far as we can go till we get past all the stuff that like gets automatically fed to you and find something truly random. And there's a show or a series that was on Netflix, and I think that it was from 2016, I want to say, called Internet Famous. And it is like it is a series that is like made for Instagram people because each of the episodes is about 7 minutes long. and so each one, you know, purports to profile a different internet famous person. And the first one is the Fuck Jerry guy. But I think it was produced by him. I'm not 100% sure on this, but because they had footage of him from like 2012 or something or whatever he was first starting his career as a viral content boy. And then it fast forwards to him like having his office space and starting Jerry Media and all this shit. And it was like beyond Entourage level of like vacuity. It was just the most empty thing in the world. And
that person, they just aggregate other people's memes. Like,
right. They don't even make their own stuff. It's just, then it was like they were branching out into merchandising and making like a card game about memes or something like that. It was just like, and I remember thinking, and I hate to always reduce it to something like sex, but I was just like, man, if you were a teen and like Fuck Jerry was like somebody you were supposed to have a crush on or something because he was like an internet entrepreneur, or he was like a young mover and shaker or something, because he's like not a bad looking dude, but you can like imagine that a lot of girls are like sending him nudes or whatever. And I was just like, man, like it's the least sexy thing in the world to be to be a like content aggregator. It's totally soulless.
We're in a scammer economy.
Yeah, but there's not, scammers are sexier though. There's something about a scammer where it's like there's more potential for like the imagination, like or like I don't know, some sense of like romance or like Bonnie and Clydeism or something. Speaking of,
there's more plot.
Yeah, there's more plot. Like with them, it's just like being a receptacle. It's just like being a human receptacle, and like not in a hot way. So I mean, I felt old, but I also felt like, I mean, I guess the worst combination of things. I felt old and superior, but then you know, realizing then that he had a hand in one of these documentaries, and that like I hadn't put it together, I had totally forgotten that he was like behind the Fyre Festival. And then I kind of seeing that like very depressing 7 minute episode and then remembering that he was a Fyre Festival dude, I was just like, oh my god, like this culture has not gone away at all, you know,
and
even
this
with
like
the embarrassment
prolongs
of
his fame or whatever.
Yeah, totally
gives him more longevity.
Yeah, no, and
mythologize.
I mean, I guess they like what happened to the main guy, the Billy McFarlane or whatever his name was, the main guy. Yeah. Is he like in legal trouble now? I mean, I remember right after Fyre happened, then they're like, we're going to do it again next year, guys. It'll work this time. And then everybody was like, LOL. And it didn't. I think that's not happening anymore.
Yeah, but no, it's all like Wolf of Wall Street stuff. He'll probably end up on like a speaking tour telling people how to rip other people off.
It's like a less consequential version of Steve Bannon. We still feel like we need to like hear these more or less people who've more or less proven themselves to be worthless. We feel like we have to hear them out in order for like to have like more information, because all information is good to have in your brain. Right. It's just like, no, I don't know if this is actually helping anybody.
Yeah, maybe don't give this person money to talk about anything.
Yeah.
Banish them.
Today's episode of Night Call is brought to you by Green Chef.
Green Chef is a USDA certified organic company that makes eating well easy and affordable, with plans to fit every kind of lifestyle. Green Chef boxes contain a wide variety of organic ingredients, seasonally sourced for peak freshness, and there are meal plans for every diet, including paleo, vegan, vegetarian, pescatarian, Mediterranean, heart smart, lean and clean, keto, gluten-free, and omnivore. We got the chance to try Green Chef and loved the high-quality, clean ingredients. They're pre-measured, perfectly portioned, and mostly prepped, which saves a lot of time. I made the chicken pho, which my whole family loved, and it was super, super easy to prepare. We also love the fact that you can switch up your meal plan whenever you want to try a new way to eat and discover new recipes. For $50 off your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/call. That's $50 off your first box of Green Chef at greenchef.us/call.
He also, I think I remember that there was an article where he quoted what he was going to get for the Hulu documentary to Netflix and like grossly inflated it to try to get Netflix to pay him more money to appear in their documentary. And they were like,
yes,
no,
yeah.
No, yeah. We're not going to do
but
that.
But he still got paid by somebody.
I know.
No, he got, yeah, he got paid by, so I think the Hulu documentary is the one that paid them for their participation. And yeah. Then the Netflix one is the one that was like, you know, co-produced by them. So
and he did not appear in the Netflix one. And in the Hulu one, the reason I heard that the Netflix one was better is that the Hulu one apparently relied on these interviews with him and he just kind of didn't provide much information.
I heard the Hulu one also relies on a lot of stock footage.
Oh, really?
Which is everyone's favorite way to pad out a skimpy documentary. There's a lot of like cut to like a cartoon example of like what a word means.
I mean, to be fair, I'm kind of actually into that now. I think we've talked about this before, but I spend a lot of time at night reading WikiHow. And there was one about how to hypnotize a chicken.
Oh,
like, they
yeah.
have literally oh, everything. But I find the art tremendously soothing.
The one that you posted of how to be mysterious was hilarious.
It was amazing.
So good.
I love the art. I learned you can hypnotize chickens from Lust for Life.
Oh, really?
And then I had it written on my 7th grade backpack.
You did?
Whiteout pen.
Very cool.
That's like hypnotizing
cool.
chickens.
Yeah.
But I thought that was so cool. You can hypnotize chickens.
You can. And you can be mysterious. All you have to do to be mysterious is whisper. That was a real takeaway. Whisper and wear necklaces.
So this email comes to us from Sage. And Sage says, "Hi, Night Gang. Last year, I worked at a restaurant that had a lot of strange paranormal activities. When I started, the first thing my coworkers showed me was a security video of the lobby. A bright white orb dashes across the screen, making a sharp turn into the kitchen. Large pans would routinely fall from the shelves. It was spooky and yet expected from the staff. One night I was working close when there was a blackout and the dark restaurant was only lit by a few backup lights. I didn't leave until we got the okay, and waiting around the big old building was probably the creepiest night of 2018 for me. Additionally, the history of the place's namesake, Hoyles, went back to the first landowners in Atlanta, Georgia. They bought up the land before the city was even established. Sus. This guy, George Hoyle Ivy Jr., started a grocery store at the location in the mid-20th century. They let others run the property for years as seedy taverns by various names. When I got there, it was a new bar and grill trying painstakingly to make a PG bougie hangout spot. I'd quit when I found better paying work and have never been back. Maybe I'll go back if Nightcall wants to do a live pod in Atlanta. Y'all is invited, is all I'm saying. Sage." Haunted restaurant.
Wow, thank you, Sage. It's a great Nightcall.
Yes, it's such a good Nightcall. Also, I would love to go to Atlanta. I love Atlanta.
Yeah. I've never been to Atlanta in my life.
Me neither.
I'm really into Atlanta.
Maybe to the airport once.
Oh, yeah, I've been to the airport. I don't feel like we've ever talked about orbs on this show, which I used to be really into orbs.
I'm into orbs. Yeah.
I tried to start a Tumblr. It might have been when I was at Grantland or it might have been earlier, but it was some job where I had the Getty login for the publication that I worked at. And so would be always combing through these paparazzi photos of celebrities coming and going from places. And sometimes, every once in a while, you would get an orb in the picture. And so I wanted to start a Tumblr that was just celebrities with orbs.
It's not too late, Emily.
I know. Well, it was when I had the access to that sweet, sweet content. But yeah, I think they're kind of interesting. I like how they're
go
kind
on
of
on about orbs.
Well, what do you mean? Do you know what orbs are?
No, explain. Yeah. To the audience.
Orbs show up in, they can show up in video and photography sometimes. They are like semi-explained, like, you know, it's kind of like something like a light flare or, you know, any other photographic or like optical effect from light hitting a lens a certain way. But they also show up in infrared or like night vision photography, which you would think would work differently. People, I don't know too much about that, but
people think they're ghosts a lot.
They are
ghosts. People think they're ghosts. Thing that's creepy about them is like, okay, sometimes you see an errant orb floating around somewhere or like in some night vision security photography, as Sage was talking about. But then sometimes you see that, like, if you look it up, sometimes there are things where there's like a bunch of little orbs like clustered around something. Ooh. And it totally gives me the heebie-jeebies. It's so spooky. I think just because it's like that circle creepiness thing that we always come back to.
Related to the whole phobia.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's also like a parasite or something. It's some kind of spiritual or like optical light parasite. And that freaks me out. I find that to be very freaky. So
I think we've talked about this before, but orbs, like the discussion of orbs is very popular on baby monitors, you know, like surrounding baby monitors. There are a lot, you see a lot of orbs on baby monitors. I think, you know, like we talked about, that they often show up in night vision. And also baby monitors are usually positioned pretty high up and like far away from the baby. So there's lots of stuff that's, you know, comes into focus between the camera and the person. Mm-hmm. The other day I was looking through old pictures and I lived in this condo for a little over a year and every picture taken in that condo has orbs. And I was like, initially I was just like, well, I think that was just a really dusty era and that these are just kind of like dust motes.
Yeah. No, that's totally
but it
like
could be haunted. I mean, it's easily explained either way. But it is interesting because, like, occasionally you do see, like, a weird cluster of orbs or the orbs are moving in a way. Like, if you have a video of the orbs, they're moving in a way that just doesn't seem to be naturally explained.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a very, like, Ghost Hunters type thing. It's like Ghost Hunters 101, you know, breaking out the infrared camera and checking out some orbs.
But okay, what I was thinking about was the movie Phantasm. Uh-huh. It's a horror movie from the late 70s where there is an orb that flies around and shoots out spikes.
Ooh.
Controlled by an evil wizard.
Uh-huh. Whoa.
It's a very good movie. You should see it. There's like, I feel like in the sequels, maybe there are like more orbs. It's like a, looks more like orbs. A pinball flying through space. And then it like shoots out a knife at
you. So did
you
think that Sage was writing in to talk about like a weaponized light blob?
Well, I didn't know.
There's knives and pans and stuff and heavy equipment in the restaurant, it could be lethal.
All the stuff about like ghosts being able to use magnetic force.
Yeah.
For telekinesis.
Like to like throw a knife across the room.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Yikes.
Don't piss off the ghosts.
Or like, I feel like this is in some movie or show that I've seen, but like a ghost or a poltergeist that messes with the gas range. Like that's freaky too.
Well, the idea of something messing with your appliances at home is freaky, which is why it's also freaky when people hook it all up to like a smartphone.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I think I'm always convinced when people are talking about or like some like I'm intrigued when people tell me a ghost story and then they're like, I didn't want to be there anymore. As opposed to like when I read the story, I want to see it. Like, I want to go there. But when people are like genuinely like, I have no interest in going back to that place ever again. Then I'm like, OK, there's some other weird, chilly energy going on there.
Well, it depends if the ghosts are good or bad, I guess, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Also working, being compelled to go there, whether you like it or not, not being able to say like, OK, I've had enough. I'm going to go. I mean, that adds a layer because then you're basically like entering into contact with this or contract. With the spirits.
Well, you have hostile coworkers.
Exactly.
If they're trying to help you, just like stir the rue or whatever, it's fine.
Stir the rue.
What's the most haunted restaurant you guys have been to?
I mean, I used to work at a country club that it wasn't old enough to really feel truly haunted, but it had bad vibes. And I just felt like maybe like bad stuff had happened there before, but in like a very mundane way. It was not a gothic type. It was not a gothic country club.
I'm shocked that we didn't all just say at the same time that the most haunted restaurant we've all been to is Takes.
Oh, yeah.
Because clearly that's the right answer.
We did Texas a show in a haunted restaurant.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I mean, I think there is documentation of this. You can look it up on the internet. There's stuff where it's haunted. Do you think Clifton's was haunted? Clifton's cafeteria?
For sure it was. And it's now it's haunted by like not being able to be successful at all.
Yeah. It's the ghosts.
There was a place called the Spanish Kitchen that I think was Hollywood that was like a restaurant spot of death where it was like rumored to have had something creepy happen, but then it was like no restaurant could succeed in that spot, you know?
Yeah.
Anything that opened would close. I was going to say Musso and Frank's.
Oh, yeah. I feel like Musso and Frank's is haunted by friendly ghosts, though. I have
super
to say.
Friendly ghosts. Sure. But like if you found out the bartender was a friendly ghost, you'd be
right.
Like, oh,
it's
yeah.
It's very
yeah.
The Shining.
Checks out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Musso and Frank's also was, I don't know if any of you were watching the Kaminsky Method. I just got my screeners, so I'm watching the Kaminsky Method. But I realized, I was like, I could watch any show and not really be enjoying it. But then I see characters in Los Angeles choosing a place to go to dinner.
Exactly.
And I'm there for it. And then there are Musso and Frank's. And I'm like, I'm so glad I'm watching this show. And then it's over. And I'm like, right. All right, now I don't care.
Let's clarify that we are not watching, like, you know, high-minded art movies. Maybe Emily is. But... You know, Tess is watching the Kaminsky Method.
No shame in that.
I watched the Brady Bunch movie.
Oh, how was it?
Also no shame in that.
Why did you choose that?
Because it was on Hulu. And I feel like Hulu has the superior, if we're going to play Hulu versus Netflix like they want us to, Hulu has the better like video store selection of movies I might actually want to throw on in the background.
Yeah.
Although I have noticed Netflix right now anyway, and I think this is abnormal, has a surprising amount of like good classic movies. Like I watched Heat on there a couple days ago.
They're like classic movies like Heat.
Well, I mean like movies that are not new. Like,
no, I know.
Yeah. I mean, they had like Heat and Heathers because they're right next to each other alphabetically. So I was like, oh, two good movies that are on Netflix that I can watch for free. That's cool.
Neither of these places have anything from like before 1970, which is annoying.
No. Yeah. Yeah. R.I.P. Filmstruck.
R.I.P. Filmstruck. That's what Filmstruck was good for.
Guys, I have a question.
Yeah.
So we just went to the Roswell pop-up recently. We're talking about the Saved by the Bell pop-up restaurant. Would you guys go if there were like a pop-up video store that was like super grungy and gunky and was just made up
what
of things
you couldn't
find
online? What if I told you there have been a couple of these?
No, I know. But I'm curious because I'm like, have we like just completely...
No, this
talking
is what
about
my brother
Netflix
thinks.
And
my
brother's, like a year
my
ago,
brother always says, my brother Ben Lambert... Shout out Ben Lambert. Always says
Lambo.
That should be the next move for somebody is open a brick and mortar video store.
But it has to be like, I know that it's been done, but it's interesting how cynical we all are talking about Netflix and Hulu and everything right now.
It's just funny that it makes us nostalgic for going to Blockbuster, a place that everybody made fun of at the time.
The stinkiest store for some reason.
People have found that like... food and craft beer have been useful in making movie theaters relevant again, kind of the Alamo model.
Right, so but I don't want that.
What if, though, hear me out, you have a very, like, artisanal movie rental place. They play, like, good music. There's, like, a nice candle burning, and you pick out your movie. And then while you're checking out, you can order something on Seamless or Postmates, whatever.
Are you describing my bathtub?
Right.
The greatest boutique theater?
Exactly. But it's like if you can do all that together, like basically go to a place where you get to like plan out your evening, like a place you could stop by after work.
No, wait. I love this, but I'm going to add a layer, which is that the salespeople will choose what you'll watch. You have no say. So you come in. Like, you can try to tell them, like, I'm in the mood for this or that. They don't have to listen to you, and they choose for you. You get what you get,
that's
and you don't get upset.
That's what everybody wants. Ooh.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's, like, the movie version of it, like, where
it's
they
the
have, like, 30 movies.
Here's what I'm going to add. I feel like maybe this is what MoviePass was going in the direction of before it was yanked away. Movies should be, like, $2, and there should be a multiplex, and you can just stay as long as you want.
You mean, but stay as long as you want and keep paying $2 every time you see a
movie? No, you just
$2 all you can eat movie.
I mean, that's not, I don't see how that's financially viable, but I mean, it sounds nice.
It sounds nice, right?
I think that you should have a brick and mortar where you only have at any given time 10 movies, but you change it up randomly and no one knows when you're going to get a whole new shipment of movies. And then people go in and you get assigned a movie and you have to watch it.
No, I love the idea of like, it's like a red box, basically. A red box is a significantly limited selection, but they tend to be more new release stuff. But if you had a more snobby selection and the machine dispensed a wine collection.
oh my God, we have such different desires for a movie theater. I just want
a candy bar. A movie theater that's like
it's not
cheap.
A theater though. It's a rental place. So you could have a code for a rental if you don't have a Blu-ray player. Like you could have a code for a digital download that expires.
Okay, my movie theater is called Detention. And you're in a classroom.
Somebody wheels in a TV on a cart.
You don't get to pick the movie. It's probably like Donald in Math Magic Land.
Yeah.
Or it's like about not getting pregnant.
And you can smoke weed inside.
And then you have to pass a test at the end to prove that you were paying attention. And if you pass the test, you get a prize.
That's like going to see a free screening.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the prize is you saw a free movie.
Yeah.
The best movie theater going experience of all is just being in on the screening racket.
Okay. At the end of the screening, everybody picks one person to stone to death. I'm just thinking outside the box, the bird box. Like, what if at the end?
I mean,
of
that
bird
is something that
screening...
is not a part of the traditional movie theater model, and probably the reason it's failing.
Yeah.
Okay. Or everything's a trampoline.
What do you mean?
Like you're watching
a movie is a trampoline,
but instead of seats, it's all trampolines. Cool. You guys aren't thinking outside the box enough.
Everything's a trampoline is like broke my brain trying to understand.
You're the one
you
told me about. What's the place kids love to go? Scooter's Jungle.
Jungle.
Or there's a thing called like it's
Psy
like Jump
Kids
Space
or something.
Something.
Yeah. They have all of these places where you just bounce off everything and then you climb up onto like a terrifying tunnel made of rope and then you're just like, I can fall down and
be
fine.
That and there's a movie playing.
Oh man, sensory overload. I don't know, you guys.
What's up, everyone? My name is Steven. Today, I'm going to be sharing with you my top three favorite smart drugs or nootropics or nootropic-like products. Now, just a disclaimer.
Before we began, Molly and I were shooting the breeze, and I don't know how we got around to talking about it, but we started talking about nootropics, and those are like brain supplement drugs. And I'm smart drugs. I'm careful about like taking things. Or at least was until pretty recently. But
you like to see if your immune system can fight it off.
Ugh. And as you can tell, I've lost the war on that. I was taking oregano oil.
I think a lot of people have cried where they're like, I'll ride it out.
Ride it out. No, I was taken down by a cold. But I did take, I started taking a nootropic. Also, it was really hard for us to figure out how to pronounce this. And
I was like, can we call them nootropics?
Nootropics.
Have you guys ever taken any?
No, but I was saying a friend of mine took them for a long time and I was like, what are all these weird pills in our cabinet? And she was like, oh, they're just these weird brain pills I ordered off the internet.
Yes, that's where you get them.
So is this like the modafinil school of drugs or what are we talking about here? Or like bulletproof coffee? Because there's like a range.
I think it's somewhere between. I started taking theanine, L-theanine, which is the thing in green tea and I think also in black tea that makes you feel chill but alert. Because I really, my whole life has been spent chasing that chill but alert vibe. It's so elusive. But I started taking it and I was really into it. But it's... Again, like, you know nothing about it. You're not, like, talking to a doctor about it, and you just order it off the internet.
Did it come from the dark web?
No, it came from Amazon. I mean, it's basically as
Amazon
if I was...
Amazon is the dark web.
Fair. <Yeah. laughs> It's like if you were drinking... You couldn't drink enough green tea to get, like, this amount
Are you sure?
of the thing. I'm pretty sure.
That's what they say. They're like, this is, like, a super amount.
Well, you can just look at how much is in green tea and then look at the bottle that I bought that's accidentally, like... a double dose of how much you're supposed to
take. Is there such a thing as too much?
I'm sure there is. I mean, I think with this one, it's like an anti-anxiety, you know, people use it for like anti-anxiety causes. So right. I think if you take too much, at first when I was taking it every night and I was like, whoa, this feels terrible. I mean, I just felt like I was dragging. It was the chill without the alert. But then I was like, okay, I'll just take it like a couple times a week. And it's been really it's good. It gives you like a weird chill feeling, but it is really scary to be like, this is probably super duper unregulated.
Well, it right. for sure is.
Yeah.
There's so much of that stuff though now with CBD and everything else.
That's what I, yeah. Like, yeah.
And it's like, I've been wanting to try CBD for a long time, and I've talked to Molly about this too, and it's just like, it's not that I'm afraid of it like doing something adverse to me. It's just that I feel like I'm gonna get burnt, like I'm gonna spend money on something that doesn't actually do
it
anything.
It is so crazy expensive. I went into Lassen's the other day, which is our natural food store that's controversial, mm-hmm. but I was just walking in to get a sandwich, so don't judge me, but I was like, oh cool, there was a thing of CBD, I think it was tincture, and it was, the price was like mislabeled. I was like, $14, gonna get some CBD tincture. Oh, and no. It was like 75. It was so crazy.
Oh my God.
Expensive. Here,
I mean, CBD is such snake oil right now because you can just say anything has CBD in it. Yeah. And nobody can prove it.
Well, it's because it's like weed that doesn't get you high. Right. So
like
what
if you
is
drink
it?
Something that's supposed to have weed in it and you don't feel different, you know that it was like not real. But with CBD, it's like literally everything in LA and California right now, like at gas stations, they're like, have this CBD drink.
I've talked to people where I know that it helps, like they apply it topically. And I have two friends with arthritis and they say it's really, really helped.
I know lots of people who use it and they like it. My question is like, is it a placebo?
That's a good question. Right. I know. I mean, it's also like without its nice friend THC, like how much fun is CBD really?
I tend to think every drug is a placebo, even real drugs, which has worked against me in time. Yeah. Yeah, because when I first started taking antidepressants, I was like, what are the odds these are actually doing anything? Right. Why don't I stop taking them and find out? I'll bet it's just me. And then it was clearly the drugs had something to do with it.
Yeah.
The absence is felt more than the presence in that case, I think. Yeah.
I've never taken brain drugs that I have to take every day, but I'm very sensitive to medication, which is probably why I'm like really conservative about it.
Well, brain drugs are crazy and they're like technically legal, but they feel like
it's a wild west.
Like when they tell us it's like a big experiment on our generation, we'll be like, oh yeah, yeah,
makes sense, check
that out. Sure, yeah.
I mean, that's what's weird though too, is like how fragile your brain chemistry is. I mean, I for a while I was taking Ativan for panic attacks and it was like, it just was very effective, but to the point where I just couldn't really function if I was taking Ativan. So it was really only for like emergencies. But then there's this weird, totally false sense of security you have when you're dosing yourself with something that's like from the earth, but where in the earth is it from?
Tess, I met another person who had an eye issue and I told them about your eye struggle.
Which we can't talk about in detail because it made everyone want to throw up on our podcast. Yeah.
But he went through all the same stuff where he had like an existential crisis related to like how vulnerable his eye was.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. I feel like a lot of people, you know, who have had like a kind of weird, you know, there are certain medical emergencies that just really make you realize that like, you're a very soft,
fragile ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why I prefer snails to slugs. Mm. Is I'm like, look at the slug.
It's
just a bunch of guts
climbing
around.
Speaking of fragile ecosystems, I will say one movie I'm really glad people are learning about through streaming is Annihilation, which is apparently like the most streamed movie on Hulu now.
Oh wow,
that's something where I'm like, hey,
you guys. We're making so much fun of Annihilation when I was all up on it.
That is because we had to go to a theater to see it.
I still, I do think I would have enjoyed it more at home. I think seeing it in a matinee.
Really?
Yeah.
The sound? You would rather see that on your TV?
You know, Emily, I'm so cheap. It's like to enjoy a movie in the theater, I have to leave like having like cried.
I think that's it too. I just expect a lot more from the experience if I pay for it.
Yeah, I want like a $25 experience. Yeah. I felt like with Annihilation, we went into a matinee. It was crazy expensive. It was not, there weren't a lot of people in the theater. And I felt, and you had given it such a glowing recommendation and I really wanted to like it, but I wanted, my expectations were so high.
Your expectations were like a giant sub and then you got a cheese sandwich.
Exactly.
And you were like, well, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
But, ouch.
Sorry, it's better than a cheese than that cheese sandwich.
The fire
festival. Not that cheese sandwich.
I'm just saying, A Star Is Born, I walked out like, okay. That was a movie.
That's a Big Mac.
That I spent money on.
Maybe I can't be impressed. I mean, I was... A Star Is Born was solid for me. Well, I wasn't blown away.
We should also put it out there that, like, neither one of us loves to leave our house that much.
No, I hate it. Absolutely hate it.
So an experience has to be really amazing, yeah. Which is the experience everyone will have when they come to the Night Call live show.
Exactly. Hey,
bring it all back.
February 5th at 10 p.m., DJ Cutie Snacky, Emily
That's
Yoshida,
me.
DJ Sinking Feeling, Tess Lynch, and of course me, DJ Fuck Y'all, playing all your favorite hits. And
I started to put together my playlist or my set for the DJ night, and I'm so excited about it. I'm finally gonna get to share all this like vinyl I've been slowly amassing in my new phase of life as a vinyl collector that I'm bringing with me on a suitcase. And yeah, it's a conceptual set, and I'm really excited to share it with everybody.
Welcome all fuck moms.
Exactly.
To the Night Call Live show. Yep. With the magic of Emma.
Also, it's free, so you don't have to spend $20 to go sit in a movie theater waiting for that $20 to come back.
It's free. There will be magic. Mm-hmm. There might be some jam. What more could you ask for from an experience? Give us a call at 24046-NIGHT with all your haunted restaurant experiences.
Yeah, tell us about your experiences.
Thoughts on nootropics.
What was the worst movie you ever saw in the theater?
Thoughts on Netflix and
Hulu documentaries. I want more drug experiences. I'm ready to turn this into a full-blown
Arrowhead. Like, let's take it to Arrowhead Town.
Take it to the vault.
Down for that. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Night Call. Please give us a rating if you like our show on iTunes. We'll be back next week. Bye.
Mom.
Bye.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy.
Yeah.
Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.